Thank you, Stella. It's a pleasure to be here this morning and share with you a few things we're doing and some of our philosophy at the Gates Foundation in breeding. And I specifically am going to talk about three different public platforms that are actually available for the general public to use to help public breeding excel. I'm going to see if I could advance these like this. So at the very highest level, the Gates Foundation's kind of new mission statement is around what we're calling inclusive, country-led inclusive ag transformation. And you saw from My Wish's talk the importance of the country-led aspects, that we want to be aligned to country policies, for example, the fertilizer policies that were so important that in My Wish's talk. And we also want it to be inclusive, and that means that we lift all boats in a society. So these are kind of our overarching kind of guiding principles. And we know from experience in the Asian Green Revolution and in other agricultural transformations that crop productivity is one of the cornerstones. There's obviously many things that have to come together to move societies from more of the subsistence end of crop production to a commercial kind of agriculture, which is what we mean by ag transformation. So again, productivity is a key part of that. And we think that breeding in that crop productivity sphere is one of the important cornerstones of that. And I put this slide here just to show sort of the power of genetics. We know and appreciate the power of inputs such as fertilizer and other types of good management. But if we look at the U.S. maize yields in Iowa, which is the top graph there, you can see that grain yields have continued to rise, but we know that fertilizer use actually peaked about 1980. So what we're getting beyond 1980 is largely a genetic and somewhat on the management side increase. And we haven't seen that in a lot of countries in Africa. Rwanda and Ethiopia are two exceptions. They're actually undergoing their sort of ag transformation now, primarily though through fertilizer application, and they can benefit from increased genetics in the future. But so anyway, to get this kind of result as we got in the U.S., it requires both then a dynamic breeding system that's generating continuous gains and then a seed system that swaps out the new varieties for the old in a continuous way. And that way farmers actually are able to realize those benefits. So these are the kind of things that we're looking at in our investments and trying to catalyze and make happen on the crop productivity side. We've invested about $1.3 billion in breeding, and this includes biofortification and GMO breeding since 2005, and our big partner has been the CGIAR system. This is the International Center System. Many of you are probably aware of some of those institutes, at least, for example, IRRI, the International Rice Research Institute in the Philippines, that's developing improved rice varieties. But there's also CIMMYT in Mexico that has stations around Africa and the others that you see listed there. And we fund basically crop breeding on 13 different crops, and these are crops that are important to the poor in developing regions of the world. The way we've been investing until the last few years was basically on a crop-focused grant that would cover pretty much the complete aspects from pre-breeding down to seed delivery and even extension of agronomic packages and also capacity building. And the idea is that we needed to create sort of a continuous flow from upstream down to delivery and capacity building. However, we think there's a big opportunity now to close the gap between what's evolved in the private sector over the last three decades and what currently exists throughout almost all the public sector breeding programs, including our CG partners. We think there's a big opportunity to close what we call the genetic gains gap, which is this sort of breeding gap. And you can see, for example, in maize in the Corn Belt, you know, we can demonstrate the genetic gains that are occurring at about 1.2% a year, whereas in Africa and South Asia, they might be a half to a quarter of that. And so, you know, we looked around and we did some diagnostics and we said, you know, the programs we're supporting are good. They're producing a lot of varieties, making a lot of advances, but we think there's some value there that's still on the table if we can leverage from the private sector. I won't say a lot about seed system development, which is the other piece, this need to swap out old genetics for new genetics. And so I won't be talking too much about that because our own strategy is very much in development at this time. So again, this opportunity to leverage state-of-the-art best practice from private to public sector. We know the private sector, for example, has highly refined product profiles to guide breeders. We found in our analysis that these were often lacking in our public sector investments. Obviously, things like modern mechanization, automation to increase throughput, digital data accumulation, and a whole series of modern approaches to increase accuracy and throughput have been adopted in the private sector. Another constraint that public systems face that the private sector has been able to overcome because of their scale and size is has been to drive down the cost of genotyping. And the public sector doesn't have real good low-cost methods to take advantage of the genomics revolution and markers. You know, they're stuck with very expensive in-house systems that go obsolete before they can, for example, fully utilize them. So we thought this is something that we need to find a solution to. The private sector also has very large testing networks. Some of them are on the order of tens of thousands of yield plots, and our best programs are operating in the hundreds. So there's a big opportunity there to close that gap as well. And also to build in a more product-focused management structure that incentivizes the programs to produce better and faster their varieties. So I just thought I would take a little bit of time to talk about three of our investments that cut across our breeding investments that help these investments achieve higher genetic gain. So the three that I'll talk about are a standardized breeding assessment tool, affordable information system packages, in particular one of them called the breeding management system. And then how we're enabling our public breeders to get access to low-cost, high-throughput genotyping. The fourth platform that we have, and I know Liz is here somewhere, I think, from the Cornell group, and I won't talk in depth about that, but there is another platform called the GOBI, the Global Open Breeding Informatics Initiative, that's led by Cornell, which is doing some very interesting work. So we have this standardized assessment tool, and one of the reasons I'm bringing this up is also for the benefit of the people here in that it's a downloadable resource. You can go onto the website, you can download this tool, and you can essentially do a self-assessment for yourself of your own program or your friend's program, if you like. So this tool provides standardized criteria that you can interrogate your program with, I'll go into depth a little bit about what it goes into. But it basically is a tool that distills the criteria and says what is the private sector and the best public sector breeding programs, what are they doing, and what can we and how do we compare in our own programs with these gold standards. Again, providing a common evaluation framework to help identify systemic issues and comparisons. And we're using it in our own investments to basically help strengthen and make new investments, identify gaps that we can then invest against. So we actually outsource the development of the tool. At the Gates Foundation, you might know, we don't actually do the work ourselves. We try to find people smarter and more capable than ourselves to actually get the job done. So We outsource this to the McKinsey company and Context Network companies, and they sent experts around the world and visited the best private sector companies and some of the good public sector ones, and built an initial draft. They then went through a piloting process with a range of types of different partners. So you can see there, Erie in the Philippines, an example of an international center working on rice, IITA the same for minor crops, cowpea and cassava, a national program, the Bangladesh Rice Research Institute, and then two other national programs, again, for a wide range of types of crops. So we now have a refined tool, and we've given a grant to the University of Queensland in Australia to actually send experts around and assess the different programs and provide reports back to that institution. And then these reports are used to generate actually funding requests to different donors. It doesn't necessarily have to be to us, but it can help really refine a proposal because you have some criteria based on an assessment. So this BPAT tool assesses 9 different components. Okay. She's telling me I have 5 minutes. Okay. Education, I'll let you kind of read those. The capacity of your program, the sort of infrastructure you have, the breeding methods, for example, that you're using, the design execution, cultivar development, release and production, product support and program impact, and then 3 dimensions of improved planning, management, budget, and finance. So, yeah, so that was the BPAT tool. Again, you can go on to breedingassessment.org, plantbreedingassessment.org, and download the tool and give it a test drive. Another platform we have is the Breeding Management System. This is a software tool that provides sort of end-to-end plant breeding informatics support. It's really applicable to medium and smaller programs, but again, is available to the public, and I can see I'm running out of time. So basically there's a desktop version and a server version. If you're a private company, a small private company, there will be a license fee associated with it, but you can give it a 90-day trial. And this was done purposely because we wanted to have this actually become a business that could be maintained forever. As a donor, it's, you know, you don't want to be committed to anything forever, so it actually has a business model behind it. If you're a public sector program in Africa, there's no license fee, and it's free. And there's a help desk and so on that can help guide you through it. Again, it's a soup to nuts kind of program. Everything from breeding planning, field labels, field designs, data analysis, and so on. And I'll just go through these really fast. You can manage the list of your programs, germplasm details, great pedigree trees, manage your crosses, manage your nurseries, your seed inventory. And a lot of these things really were being done all with Excel sheets in most programs. And so having a tool like this, we think is a tremendous advance. Field plans, labels, again, electronic data capture is built into it. And then you can do multi-site statistical analysis. It's all built in end-to-end. And then the final thing that I wanted to share with you is the access that the public sector programs we support have for high-throughput genotyping. Again, this problem of lack of access to cost-effective marker platforms. And this is an arrangement that was made through a Swedish company called Intertech. They have offices in Sweden, Australia, and also in Hyderabad. And it for the crops that we work with, most of these have about 1,000 markers already available, and there's additional markers coming online and that can be mounted for later assays. They're promising 14-day turnaround, good data recovery. And at prices that having done this in the past in my previous research life, almost seems unbelievable that you can actually get DNA extraction and some markers done along with some QC and data curation for $2. So we think this will be kind of a game changer in the way that we even help our breeding programs redesign their breeding platform. So we think this is going to be quite a quite an advance. So I think that's all. Thank you very much. I think I'm about time. Ah, wonderful. Okay, I rushed through it and then.
Thank you for the presentation. Yes. I just wonder, with all this improvement in breeding programs, what is next? So how they build data foundation thing, what is going to happen? Because all these research centers are going to improve the genetics, but what is next? Who is going to be the driver to reach the farm?
Could you please repeat the question for the recording?
Yes, so I'll paraphrase it, but I think the question is what's next, meaning, okay, we're going to create all this genetic gain around the world in the programs we support, and then how is that going to actually get to the farmer? Well, a lot of our work now is actually working with national governments to help them work on their seed delivery systems. We also have initiatives around the maize seed systems in the private sector because we think the hybrid maize play is something that will pretty much handle itself because there's enough profit there. But I think this is still an internal work in progress for us. But we think the involvement of national governments in ensuring, for example, there's the foundation seed units are working, and that subsequent systems are, there's either some kind of support for the crops that don't have a strong economic case to get them to farmers. So I don't have a complete answer for you except an approach, which is to work with the national governments. Do we have time?
Go ahead.
Okay.
Two questions to put on the floor, even if there's no time to answer them now, maybe during the meeting. From what you're seeing, National program variety release protocol used to be so slow that they would hold everything up no matter how quickly you got the variety released. So is there change and progress and way to help on that? Mm-hmm. And then a related question is that it was very hard to retain the outstanding young trained plant breeders in the programs, even internally. They would be promoted up to administration so quickly. Any thoughts about that?
Absolutely critical problems, and we're aware of those. And I think again, the answer might be similar to what I just said, and that is with engagement with our national partner governments. A lot of those are more policy issues around compensation, around functioning of the release system, and so on. The way we've been approaching it now through our grants is to kind of put little band-aids and workarounds to get those varieties released. Helping the release committees meet by giving them enough money to have a meeting, and then those kind of approaches. But what we need is a more systemic country approach. So that's where we're heading now. We hope it's more effective. Thank you.
Thank you so much.